Okay, so good afternoon. First of all, thank you for having me here today. It wasn't easy to attend this event, but we appreciate a lot the work of ERA and of our colleagues from Austria. As Bernie said, my good friend over here, my name is Romul Nicolae Ungureanu. I'm the national coordinator of Romania on trafficking and the director of the National Agency Against Trafficking Persons. I've got the mandate from the Romanian government, and I report yearly to the Prime Minister and to the Parliament about the progresses, and sometimes, unfortunately, about the things that are not going so well in my country. So I believe that's why they choose such a young guy, because I'm easy to be put aside if my report is not so good. But I've got my courage from my previous work. I have worked within the organized crime department only on trafficking and immigration. And I can tell you, because I have seen the list of participants, maybe not all of you, you are working or you have worked before on exactly the topics of trafficking. So maybe you are curious how a trafficker looks like, or maybe you haven't seen the victims of trafficking in your work experience. Am I entirely wrong or right? Then we're all knowing exactly what I'm talking about, because sometimes giving lectures and talking about trafficking and working with professionals, law enforcement or either lawyers or prosecutors, but that they haven't met in real life a victim, it's difficult to pass a message about your work. Because we, now all of us, we understand how important it is in police work, in prosecutors' work, and later on when we deliver our products to the judges, how important it is to keep into account the victim. In Romania and in most of the countries in EU, it is promoted a victim-centered approach as well for the police and for the prosecutors work. If you had told me that 10 years ago when I was a young investigator, I might say no, because primarily police officers are being trained to interview perpetrators, criminals, and victims of crimes that are willing to share the story, because either something was taken or stolen from them, or even if they were abused physically, they have this anger to say the story. But it's a different situation when we're talking about sexual abuse, personal abuse, domestic violence, victims of trafficking, because in more of the situations, they are not willing to share the story. I don't have any intention actually to go through all the presentation, because I have seen that the colleagues from ERA, they printed and you have it in your folders. So with your permission, I'll just pick up a few points that in my opinion are important to be shared with you. And I will exemplify with a few concrete situations from my experience as an investigator. Because we're talking at the end about, on this side of the topic, the police role in interviewing, I believe that is one of the most important parts in the entire process. Immediately after the identification, where most of the actors in the field are making the most horrible mistakes, because that's the moment when the victim decides either to work, either to be cooperate with the authorities or not. You don't have the chance to make a second good impression, never. So if the first impression is a wrong one, either if you are too authoritative, either you are placing yourself on the other part of the table saying that, all right, I'm the authority, or I'm from the NGO, you were a victim, and you treat them as a victim from the first moment, then the entire chain will lose something. Because at the end, when the judicial process is up to the end, you need a witness in the court of law. And it is being seen as a witness unless you do not have trainings for judges about victim sensitivity. And as my good friend Gerald said today, of course we cannot instruct judges. Even using this word in the same sentence, with all the respect for those of you that are judges in the room, I'm not a police officer, so you cannot call me for orders later on. It is not happening, especially in most of the countries where the administration has certain very strict rules. But what we can do, and what we have done, for instance, and it's not happening only in Romania, I proposed to the Superior Council of Magistrates to include in the curricula special topics about victim sensitivity. Of course, there are a lot of modules of training, and you judges, you know very well that you've got a lot of work to do. I totally understand that. But having these modules that sometimes are lasting only for 2 or 3 hours, about what a victim feels, about post-traumatic stress disorder, about how they can change their statement over the process. And Gerald mentioned that as well. Maybe she's saying today, yes, I was trafficked in Spain, and tomorrow she's coming up with a different story. It could be like that. We cannot understand exactly the type of trauma that it is present over there. And I can make a suggestion. Maybe you have done it before for your work. If you are thinking at yourself as being a victim of trafficking, and work with this exercise for a couple of minutes or take half an hour of your time, and you have suffered abuse, sexual violence, you have been starved to death, or you have been put to work long hours for a couple of euros, but don't just think about it. Try to visualize that. Try to put yourself over there. Would you be willing to share that with someone that you meet for the first time? Would you be able or willing to answer to the question like, how many clients did you have, sir, last night? Will you answer to that? Don't think so. Because even if we have the help of psychologists working with us, and in Romania we have this kind of mixed teams when we perform the interviews, even if you are trying to go beyond of the appearances, I think, and that's my very strong opinion, that we'll never be able to understand entirely what's going on and how the reactions are appearing after such trauma. We have started back in 2001, for instance, to train police officers in the organized crime department, particularly on the topics of trafficking in human beings. We started to have mixed teams of investigators because before 2001, for instance, an interview of a female victim of trafficking could have been done by a male, which is, in most of the situations, entirely wrong. Practice shows that a female, a woman, is sharing this type of traumas more openly with a female investigator. But even so, you have to choose it carefully. And this with all the respect about, we do not have to profile or whatsoever, but we have to choose even the investigator in a way that would not intimidate the victim. If you have an investigator, a male or a female, which is, for instance, a very large person and strong with a very strong voice and quite active and a little bit of aggressive, it's good as a police officer. It's great to send it to break the doors, to get the criminals. I was happy to have this kind of crazy guys, interesting guys in my team before, but I would never put them to interview victims in a very sensitive situation. I'm not a supporter of the criers, of crying people that, you know, they start to cry before the victim, because that's more damaging, actually. You have to control yourself. In all the situations, even if you show compassion, you have to do it in a very restrained way. Of course, we can go to read the rules in my PowerPoint presentation, but I don't think that's the idea, because I have seen victims that are closing themselves. Once, for instance, if a male is shaking the hand, which in most of the situation is a sign of politeness and, you know, come on, welcome, please step into my office. This is a physical contact. And that could bring back memories from the trafficking experience. Another don't or advise not to do it, you never hug or you never get so close to a victim in that very intimate space, because that's a basic rule. You might do it sometimes with the perpetrators just to, you know, get closer, and maybe you have a cold and your voice raises a little bit when you ask certain questions, but it's a different situation here. What we tried to do as well, I had, when I was the head of the unit in the organized crime department, I had special trained officers for different type of situations. It was quite difficult because I didn't have hundreds of persons, obviously. But I knew that I had a very good interviewing, a female police officer, that she could get the story in such a way that it was very useful later on in the courts of law. Because unfortunately, in most of the countries, and this is a situation that we have to admit it, the judges are asking for the statement of the victim. It used to be written even in the guiding books that I don't like it, and all the institutions are full of it. But the golden rule of trafficking, if you don't have a victim, you don't have a case. This is wrong, because you can have a case of trafficking without the statement of victim. Of course, it's more difficult. It's more work for the police. You have to look around for gathering different type of evidences. You cannot stay in the office as a police officer working in the organized crime department. And you cannot wait that the victim will tell you the entire story, she will tell you the bank accounts, then you can follow the money, as Francesco said, and you'll seize the money. In 2 weeks, you'll get the commendation letter from the commissioner, job done. It doesn't work like that. We've spent sometimes months and years without having a conviction. I was happy. My boss wasn't happy because he was from the old generation. I had to explain why I have spent so much money, so many working hours of my team, and we didn't have the conviction at that time. Because we chose, together with the prosecutor, to have a disruptive investigation. Because it was more important at the time to secure the victims and then to look for evidence. It's because we just couldn't wait another 6 or 4 months to get more evidence, and meanwhile, the victims to be exploited further on, somewhere in Spain or Italy and UK. Because this is another rule in the procedures. I'm quite hating this microphone somehow. If you have intelligence that girls are being kept somewhere against their own will and being exploited, or male, of course, you have to react, you have to do something about it. You cannot just wait for more evidences to come, just thinking about, all right, then I'll have a case. Even working like that, our rate of success was close to 100. So almost all the cases, even after a couple of years, they were sent to court and they were convicted. Maybe that's why, and maybe this is one of the reasons that in Romania we had, for instance, in 2013, now I'm just making a little bit of advertising for my colleagues back home, 427 convictions for the crime of trafficking only, which is the highest rate in Europe after Belgium, I think. So that's the credit of the entire chain of institutions working together. Police, prosecutors, and judges at the end. And looking after the victim. From the first moment of identification, during the interviews performed by the police, of course, and later on, once the prosecutor takes the case. Unfortunately, there are still situations in which victims are being subpoenaed, called to the courts of law, to give a new statement for the fourth time, for the fifth time. For we don't know sometimes for how many times they were called to give again and again a statement. This is very damaging. First of all, for the person itself, as a person, not only as a victim of trafficking, but as a human being. And I bet it's happening in all of your countries sometimes, because then you have your own life, okay? You get a subpoena, you have to go there, because otherwise you might take a fine. And your excellencies, your judges, sometimes you issue these kind of fines very easily. I've got a few in my work as a police, because I didn't went when I was called to give a statement. More than that, we're working with the victims on the process of recovery after the trauma. takes years. And sometimes it's not a successful process, and we have to face it. Obviously, you cannot keep them or place them for the entire life in an assistance system, but what we can do is to empower them, to place them in training programs, professional reconversional programs, just to help them to move forward, just to keep them out of being vulnerable again for being recruited and re-trafficked. But once you are working on that, you get a spin. The entire story is coming back. The entire work you have done it sometimes is being destroyed because she or he has to tell the story once again, and maybe they have a new family now. Maybe they have a husband, for instance, women being trafficked with the purpose of sexual exploitation. They have a husband, they have a child, they do not know about this incident in the past, and you can actually destroy the good path, the good way that they hardly manage to be back on tracks. That's why we came with a particular program, and I'm sorry I don't have time and is not in the agenda, but I will mention just a few words about it. It's victim coordination during the criminal proceedings. It's linked with the police role in fighting THB, of course, because the National Agency Against Trafficking Persons in Romania, in partnership with the Witness Protection Unit, the Minister of Justice, the Prosecutor's Department, and the National Police, and Special SWAT Forces, were ensuring that victims are attending the court sessions when they're being called, but providing the entire package of protection, starting from physical protection, if it is needed, psychological counseling. They are accompanied by a psychologist working for our agency all the time. And the subpoenas are being sent to our offices, not to their homes. And our colleagues are going to their homes, are inviting them for these procedures. So in this way, we've managed to increase the rate of participation in the criminal proceedings from around 40% initially when I implemented this project, up to 92, meaning that out of 100 victims back 6 years ago that were identified by either police or NGOs, only 40 were willing to cooperate with the police. Why is that? You'll find it as well in the presentation in your folders. It's lack of trust, first of all. You're coming after a very bad and traumatizing experience, and this person, which might be a police officer or an NGO worker or social worker, is coming and telling you that everything is going to be all right. It cannot bloody hell be all right. After you've been there for a couple of months or 10 years or something like that, not everything can be all right. If it has been done in a wrong manner, then you're losing that person. You're losing crucial evidences for your case. Somehow placing a person out of the assistance system of the state, because most of us working for the public administration, we are, bounded by our employers to do our job. If you're not doing it because you feel something here, or you're doing it because you think this is your call or the job you dreamed about it, you're doing at least for the paycheck at the end of the month. Maybe you're not going to do it very good, but at least you have to perform it by procedures. So, at the end of the day, we're looking now to more than 90 persons out of 100 being identified that are willing to work with the authorities and come to the court of law to testify up to the end. Because they understood that if there is someone over there, or if there is a system to protect them and to provide for them all the way, then it's a successful one. Because learning from experience, I'm telling you something that is helping them in the recovery. Knowing or understanding that the criminals, the traffickers, those persons that they have done such a horrible thing to them, they'll be punished, and they can see them going to jail is helping a lot. It's not cruel thinking like that. After you've been abused in this way, it's justice being served. In this situation, being served by the state institutions. So, I do believe in that. I believe in justice being served. And in a way, I have to admit it, when I was working for the police, we used to celebrate every time when we had a successful case and the bad guys were sent to jail. We used to go out for a few drinks. I bet that most of us were still doing this because you feel that, okay, something bad is happening to them. They're paying now for what they have done. But then when I moved, when I was appointed to that agency, I understood that there is another side of the story that we have to pay more attention. Yes, okay, we can go out, have a pint that evening, the criminals are in jail, everything is closed. No, that's the moment when it starts. At least for the witnesses, for the victims, the recovery process starts. And I don't know if you noticed, but I do not use the term reintegration in referral to the victims of trafficking, and I do believe it's wrong. I know it is being used in most of the presentation and in the very well presented papers and documents around this area of professionals, but in my opinion, we are excluding them from our circle from the first beginning. If I'm thinking that I will apply a reintegration process to a victim, that means she's or he, they're already excluded. So only hearing that, they're feeling excluded. And I didn't wake up in the morning after a heavy working, reading night and come up with this idea. Someone told it. Someone said it to me, actually a victim, because she heard that and she felt in this way. And most of the things we're putting in practice in our work, actually, is not all about theory. It's about learning from practice and creating theory. Because otherwise, we'll end up with a full library of books and maps and charts and everything that will be dusted in a couple of months, but doesn't work and doesn't have the right place in practice. If you give a book or a leaflet to a victim of trafficking, it doesn't help at all, trust me. If you give them a business card with a telephone number from an NGO that is providing professional training, that's useful. There are special houses where they can learn how to live as a family again. It's something that we do not think about it. Once they're coming back and they're being placed in shelters, maybe they didn't have the chance in the last couple of years actually to live in a normal house, to go for groceries at the market, to live with other women in a house and to understand basic rules about living. And these are coming as well from real life. Right. First of all, please visit our Facebook page, the National Agency Against Trafficking in Persons. Because then, if you have interest in this particular area of work, you'll find very good initiatives, not only in organizing seminars and conferences and everything, but as well in spreading the word about trafficking. New ways of placing the message on applications, on internet, YouTube, creating music and movies. Because it's important to deliver the message to as many persons as you can, and I think it doesn't matter how you're going to do that. So even if I'll dress half of the Romanian driver buses in t-shirts with stop trafficking, and that works, I'm gonna do it. What doesn't make me so happy is that I have seen that a new computer game is now on the market, something like Sex Gang Maxer or something like that, that actually is promoting violence against women, and it's showing you and teaching you how to create your own band of criminals by exploiting girls. And they're sending you to different cities in the world. I don't know how many people are playing that game, but it doesn't raise awareness about trafficking, actually. It's creating the wrong idea that if you're doing that, you're going to end up with a nice car, a very, how do you say that in English again? Very nice, shiny gold chain at your neck.
Oh, yeah.
Like the traffickers loving it so much, and probably not advertising, but they really like the cars with the SAR and the three letters names at the end. After all, at the end of the day, I do believe that it matters what we are doing in our work. is not only to show up in the office. I'm saying that to my team and to the people that are working with me back home. It matters what we can do. So if we work in this area, and if we're not there for one person that needs us, then it doesn't matter that you are there for so many other people in interviews, in conferences, and in a lot of public events. Because what it matters for a victim of trafficking is to get the help when she or he needs it. We're talking about numbers and figures and statistics, and all our superiors, sometimes they want the statistics to be up or down. But what I'm telling them all the time, and I said that in the commissions as well, each number represents a life story. If we're talking about a decreasing or an increasing in the number of victims, then that means we're having more or less life stories with a set part behind of it. So that's why we've got to do our job as good as we can and to try to be better all the time.